Blog Talk Radio.
Great joy and good afternoon, my friend. The Nepalese meditation bowl is chiming, centering your mind and delight on The Art of the CEO, the show that brings you the most intriguing and really the most helpful advisors in the business community from all around our terrestrial orb. I am Bart Jackson, your Hieronymus Bosch of business. And today, you and I are going to grapple with one of the most vital, emotional, and confusing issues that affect you and your business community very poignantly. Yes, immigration. And no, my friend, immigration is not some quick fix issue that can be solved with a cocktail party bonbons. We're a nation of immigrants. Or, there's too many of us already. And it certainly is not some political football solved with walls or roundups and, I'm a Democrat or I'm a conservative, so I believe it's worked this way. Lady Liberty's lab must be lifted beside the golden door of America's policies. And, excuse me, we're having a little tech problem here. We've got some beautiful music from Michael coming in. Isn't that nice? Hello, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
Hi. Is there any way we can cut that music?
You're on conference call on another line.
Hello, Michael?
Yeah, hi. Is that better?
That's much better. Okay. This goes to show that strange things happen when you're dealing with topics that are important. And anyway, as I was saying, that, you know, really, Lady Liberty's lamp lifted beside the golden door of America demands some very careful policies and thoughtful actions. And the good news is that today with us sits the foremost authority on that immigration puzzle, the nation's top immigration attorney, sought-after advisor to the last several presidents, Mr. Michael Wilds, whom you just heard with the poignant music, I might add. I absolutely adore it. Michael is head of partner of Wilds and Weinberg Law Firm, and he has just written a very vital book, Safe Haven in America, which humanely and authoritatively sheds little light on the immigration darkness. And as a citizen, may I recommend that you read Michael's book. It's also entertaining. So whether you are a complex product developer for a global energy provider seeking new talent and client sources abroad like Neil, or you're the social entrepreneur trying to rebuild one of America's capital cities like Jock, pull up your chair a little closer and join us on this feast of wisdom, all carefully cuisined, to make your career thrive and your ventures flourish. Michael, I'm so glad that you could take some time away from your office, which happens to be located very near the Statue of Liberty, and could come join us today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Bart, for having me. A big fan of yours, and it's always an honor to speak with you.
Thank you. Well, Michael, I've known you as a gentleman of deep principle, and having chatted with your father, it's obvious that you come from a family of principled people. So before we leap into the statutes and logistics and policies and history, could you share with our listeners one or two of your personal principles regarding immigration? Not as an author or attorney, but as an individual, those principles that guide you.
It's hard to ask for a founding principle without actually talking of my father. Although the focus is a book that I wrote, my father is the reason I got to be an immigration lawyer, and I'm very proudly a second generation with children now in law school facing the notion that dad's practice may continue yet by his grandchildren. I wanted to be with my dad as a young man, as a young boy, truthfully, holding his briefcase and cutting scrap paper, and now I have the privilege of managing a practice that's robust, built on his sweat equity and with great scholarship and ethics. America's golden doors have been hinged open for several decades and many centuries at this point. It is an experiment in entrepreneurship that has seen some of the greatest inventions and companies progress because of this main ingredient. And we have to get this right, whether it was fighting pirates on the high seas in the 17 and 1800s or dealing with ISIS and the problems at our southern border. We cannot lose the very character of our founding principles and documents just because we're scared or because somebody wants to get elected.
I thank you very much for saying that, and you have reminded me of that marvelous statistic that 47.8% of all new businesses started in this country in the past 10 years were started by first-generation immigrants. Now, Michael, you've been
first
in the business
First-generation immigrants actually become employers to Americans, and it gets to a point where you cannot see this topography where a person was a foreign national and isn't a foreign national. So it's so important for this experiment to continue.
Oh, absolutely. Well put. Now, you've been in the business yourself personally for about 30 years now, and you've had largest high-profile cases, Melania Trump, soccer legend Pele, everyone from Miss America's Miss Universe's to Boy George, and you've stood as an authority and resource for presidents. So from your view at the summit, when you started the practice 3 decades ago, what did you see then as the spirit and the goals and the ideas that drove our immigration policy then?
I saw what my dad had started in 1958, that it was not going as strong as it ought to, and that we needed more hands on deck. Well, there were 400 immigration lawyers when he was in practice. There are now 16 or 17,000, and our country has not earned its station amongst other nations in this respect. We are scared, and we are running scared. We are talking about building walls rather than creating new visas to get the world's talent into the United States employer vectors where they need it.
Mm-hmm. I think you're absolutely right. Now, up to this, let me ask this then, up to the current administration, excluding this past year, have you seen a general improvement in the immigration attitudes and goals, not just of the policymakers, but of the people themselves, or has it gone the other way?
You know, it's a very good question. The war on terrorism was a poor time for immigration. In many ways, it wasn't just the intelligence and the law enforcement communities that were caught by surprise. It was immigration that wasn't set up to help with the spouses who were felled at 9/11, for the victims of terrorist attacks, or the heroes that stepped up. And in the years that followed, you would think that the immigration, law enforcement, and the intelligence community would come up with great tools to endear themselves to human asset intelligence, to look for spies and defectors and whistleblowers, and try to entice them into the United States so that we hasten the end of the war on terrorism and it doesn't kind of devolve into the war on drugs, which just continues ad infinitum for decade after decade.
Yeah. I think you're right. It's so important, and I was going to talk about this later, but you mentioned whistleblowers, so I want to bring up, in Chapter 8 in your book, you talk about one of the most poignant whistleblowers, Iftikhar Khan, who had really within his ability the potential of changing the global face of the nuclear balance in this country, and we didn't handle it as well as we might. Have we improved, and what do we need to get these special individuals taken care of?
Dr. Khan was maybe one of 4 or 5 cases where there were good souls and Samaritans seated at important tables and desks and privy to information that were just shocked. There was Muhammad Kalui, and there's a whole chapter about him, who came to see my dad and I, a Saudi diplomat that spent weeks copying 14,000 documents of all kinds of complicity. Dr. Khan was seated at a meeting where they were conducting and building an Islamic bomb with an idea of using it against Israel and the United States, and the intelligence and the information was coming from Iran. This is at a time when all of this was just in films and in spy novels, but really was finding itself in reality. And the government was not set up to onboard people like this. Unfortunately, in that case, if you read the book, and it's chock full of stories and photos, the individual himself eventually absconded because of the risk. And in that case particular, we allowed his reputation to be discredited in order to protect him because action had been taken against his family abroad, and it was personal. And it was important for us at first to protect him by the use of the media and then have him kind of fade away quietly. The documents, his credentials, and that case was studied by storied nuclear scientists and others who still authenticate and verify his information. It's not just dastardly, but it has great historic sense.
Well, this is not, Dr. Khan is not the last such individual who's going to possess information, people who are pointed to us. So how would you, I'm putting now in your hands, I'm putting the magic wand in your hands, how do we need to change our policies and laws to allow for the special, that special talent and the special needed individuals to come in?
Right. So the question is, have we created more tools for the immigration authorities to effectively put out a welcome mat for those people that would help us, whether they're foreign students that can't onboard into the workforce? Have we created a line item for heroes or people who step up? We represented the shoe bomber hero who sat on Richard Reed and was placed in harm's way legally because there was no system to help him. And are we effectively going to tell spies who put themselves personally at risk that we can't give them green cards after they're promised by the intelligence source because it devolves in an immigration proceeding? I don't know that we've improved, but I can tell you that the government needs to preact more and react less.
I think you're absolutely right. Boy, that's well put. If you have just joined us, you are listening to The Art of the CEO, which every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time streams magically through the mightily misunderstood enigma of cyberspace, where you may listen and download this and all our episodes by visiting theartoftheceo.com. We are on many a host of internet streams and live radio, but to get all our episodes, just visit theartoftheceo.com. Now, Michael, would you say, I'm going to then turn to, let's turn to just this year as going under the new administration. Would it be fair to say that this swarm of immigration practices from walls to roundup, are these just manifestations of an old public spirit, of an old an evolving spirit that you've seen going on before? Or is it lax? Is it an answer to people? Or is this some real departure that is an oddity?
This is history repeating itself. If you studied, as I did, immigration history and law, it repeats itself. In the 1800s, when we needed railroad tracks laid from New York to California, the Chinese came. And when there was an abundance of Chinese help and no work to be done, the Chinese Exclusion Act, lasting effectively all the way to 1965, ended up evolving, and a discriminatory tactic happened. We always see the pendulum going between a concern to protect the homeland versus the entrepreneurship and the liberalization of our commerce to allow employers to have the talent that they need. You would think in 2018 we wouldn't be stopping children who needed mercy in our southern border, that we wouldn't be separating them from their families, we wouldn't be discriminating against people of a certain faith or certain countries, and that we would walk with the same stride that our founding parents, mothers and fathers did, where they came to America in order to seek a safe haven and so forth. But Alan Dershowitz, a noted professor, wrote the foreword to my book when I showed him the manuscript. And he spoke of his personal journey and the experience in Nazi Germany that America meant to him. And as that Lady Liberty sits but a few miles from my office, I can tell you that we have to get this right. We can't afford it as a nation, as parents with children, and the stewardship of our nation is in jeopardy if we don't take a tool like immigration and use it properly. If we're going to separate one another, if we're going to sully the waters, if we're going to call a notion of family reunification chain migration, if we're going to degrade people who have children. I mean, the notion of an anchor baby. I've never yet seen a woman come into our office so that 21 years later, after she has a child, she could be sponsored by that child. We're scaring people into believing that people with accents or our neighbors are not going to contribute and they're going to take more. And that is pure scapegoating. America is better. And 2018, to see this kind of stuff happen, it's just history repeating itself.
Michael, you're right, but and I think it's great that you're there as a stopgap, that the attorneys are there as a stopgap, but that's late down the line. The real I'd like to just get some advice from you. All you've got a lot of business people listening to this show. You've got people of influence and thought, and you have the mighty public. What would you have us do? What would you have us specifically do to say enough is enough? We're going to lift the lamp. We want America to be as enriched as she possibly can be. What would you have us do?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, I would not reelect any member of Congress every 2 years if they haven't competently expressed themselves on immigration. They are deemed to be weak on the homeland if they're strong on immigration, and that's unacceptable. This deafening silence in Washington has collateral effect in the urban and the suburban and the farm belts of our country, where landlords and tenants are creating illegal tenancies, where there are muster zones for day laborers, where local police, fire, and ambulance services, first responders are in harm's way, and local taxpayers have to suborn the charge of this silence in Washington. It's unacceptable. So plan A, number one, is unelect the dormant, lazy people. Number two, put more visas on the rolls. Create entrepreneurial-spirited visas. The last time our immigration laws were changed were in 1986 when President Reagan shifted the responsibility to employers. Well, that to me reminds me of Exodus chapter 1 when the Pharaoh took away the straw from the bricks. The Hebrews could no longer build the bricks, and it was harder for them to do
that. But he also said make more bricks, by the way. He raised the quota, which is magnificently,
That's right, and that's what's happening right now. We're going out. There was a dragnet of 7-Elevens. We got a few of them in the last dragnet, and they slapped people on the wrists for not policing immigration properly with these crazy I-9 forms. So that may have been wise when President Reagan, again, a adamant conservative, giving blanket green cards to 3 million people who could prove in 1986 that they were here before January 1 of 1982, and at the same time, he was able to shift the responsibility to employers. Well, what happened then is now an exponential of, we have 12 million people here, and we're still punishing employers and archaic rules. And we have Fox News and all kinds of irresponsible, xenophobic media outlets that are talking about enforcing laws on the books that, because of the silence in Washington, the first precept that I spoke of, are still carrying to a generation where there's a new normal now. And finally, the third thing is I think we really have to roll up our sleeves and come to some kind of economic and immigration policy considerations here, that if we do really properly work to disengage the narcos in the southern corridor of our world, if we look to work with NATO to deal with ISIS and other calamities, if we create better life. I just came off of a plane last evening from Israel. Years ago, Israelis were coming to the United States to be movers and cab drivers, and it was a different kind of culture. Now the country is so beautiful, it's so technologically proficient, it deals with terrorism in its stride and has a wonderful immigration policy that is evolving, and they're dealing with their challenges in that way effectively in a democratic fashion. If we create a better world out there, then just being a cop having to clean up fights is no longer our job. We will have less of an immigration problem.
You're right, and I will say we do also. I want to get further into the green card and the new type of immigrant, but right now we must take a break after Michael's really enlightening diet of America's job as selective host and hope to all people. I believe it's truly time to take a brief survey and allow me to proffer you a few utensils for today's feast. So the first, as I always do, allow me to remind each of you hearing my voice that the good Lord has gifted you with the title and privileges of chief executive officer of yourself. And since that's really the most important position you'll ever hold in your career, allow me to ask, will this be the day that you envision your career through the lens of its contribution and discover all the new avenues that view opens? Or will you continue to limit your career opportunities by saying just a batch of skill sets? The choice, my friend, is truly yours. And as a second utensil, I can sense your yearning to steep your lips into a little laughter and taste the scriptural recitation from the 102 Best Business Quips books. So let me pull it out here, and we are selecting one. And here we are. As a manager, being loud and frantic is guaranteed to seize every staff member's attention. I do not say it makes you worth listening to. What do you think, Michael? Do you get a lot of progress when you bellow at folks?
I don't know. I was trained by the NYPD back in the day that you complain against somebody privately and you laud somebody publicly at the top of your voice. So I would have to opine that if there was any caffeine in my system in the early hours of my day, it may be inadvertent and not purposeful. On the other hand, all success in my vector as a managing partner of an immigration law practice throughout the nation is dealing with the two R's. It's relationships and results. And sometimes you have to think out of the box and use a different decibel.
That is true. It is true. But just as an afterthought on all that, I want to say people do listen to words, but they discern feelings, and that's what makes motivation. Watching the boss run amok merely spreads contagious fear. So, but they want to see that you're under control and that, as Michael has just said, you have respect and you are focused on results. So if you smirked a bit over that quip, we have them literally by the books full. Just visit bartsbooks.com, pick up your copy of 102 or 101 Best Business Quips, and you will find your wit steeped in conversations filled with ready barbs and bonmots that will make your supervisors even mistake you for wisdom if you're lucky. At any rate, as a third utensil, we sumptuously spoon to you the answer to last week's business quotation, and that is the name of the individual who said, "We could have saved the earth, but we were too damn cheap." Those words were spoken by none other than the wise and barbaridly foresightful author, Mr. Kurt Vonnegut. My congratulations to all you winners, and there were many. Stick with us, because later on in the show, Blurting Your Way, comes yet another enriching quotation, and if you are among the learned souls who knows the author of that quote, simply scribble that sage's name down as you believe him or her to be, and email it right off to info@bartsbooks.com. That's info@bartsbooks.com. And if you are correct, your knowledge will earn you a mind, soul, and career-igniting gift, freshly disemboweled from the dungeons of Bart's Books Bookstore. And before we return to the nation's most authoritative voice on immigration, attorney Michael Wilds, allow me to introduce to you the company by whose good graces we are here today, and that firm is Prometheus Publishing, who invites you to take a good look and gather up some career tools and tips from an absolute gem of a volume. Behind every successful woman is herself. This marvelous guide embraces the thoughts of leading business women. There are 12 authorities and over 80 contributors. It provides the techniques and disciplines and all those important attitudes for those ladies who want their career and their ventures to soar meteorically. It makes an ideal gift for the graduate or for anyone who's in business and needs a boost. So visit bartsbooks.com, pick up your copy. And the instant you hear this show end, carpe diem, my friend, you are worth it. And now, let us return back to the most humane and sensible voice, author of Safe Haven in America, attorney Michael Wilds. Michael, most of us, immigration is sort of like judging a beauty contest with the candidates described to us over the radio. We make wild and passionate judgments about a policy and laws we don't have a clear picture of. So could you help us with just one piece? You mentioned it earlier, the green card. What does the green card mean? What does it mean? What's it supposed to mean to the holder and to his employer?
Well, the green card is the golden grail of immigration journey. You have to understand that people travail from visitors' visas or students where they're not allowed to have a dual intent, and they have to go to their unrelinquished domicile at the completion of their Disney tour or their education. Maybe you get a little practical training. When they're professional work visas, you're only allowed to work for that employer. So the H, the E, the L, the O, that acronym HELLO, those professional work visas will only have you work for that one employer. The next step in the journey is to get permanent residence, a green card. 3 years later, if you're married to a citizen, you can get citizenship, or 5 years later. But the green card, you are your own boss. You are allowed to work for yourself unlimitedly. You're allowed to travel. Unless you commit a crime or leave the United States for significant periods of time, you will be eligible for citizenship. But you can still be removed. So getting a green card is okay. In this new normal, we are finding clients with visas going for green cards going for citizenship. And even those people with citizenship, when they read the newspapers and they see tweets from the president, are shaking like Elvis Presley because they don't know what's coming next.
Right. You're absolutely true. I have one friend who had a green card, ran three businesses, and got citizenship literally because he was shaking like Elvis Presley, literally. Now, is that green card system by itself, is it in practice, is it working fairly well for both the employer and the employee?
No. It's backed up tremendously.
All right, why not? What would
you do? How practical is it that you have a family ledger and you have a business ledger? In some of the family ledgers, it can take you 15 or 20 years to bring over a immediate relative to the United States. I mean, not the immediate relative like a parent or a child, but like siblings and so forth. So on employers, it could take you several years to go through the Labor Department, and then quarters are backed up for certain individuals. The Chinese, for example, it takes them 5-6 mm-hmm. years right now. If they invest $500,000 where you can literally buy a green card through one of the regional center schemes. And I find now a lot of our Chinese clients are finding status in Greece and other European countries where they're settling there. It's much to our loss that they wouldn't invest, whether it's bridge loan financing or otherwise, into America's enterprises. Those individuals just want to get the hell out of China. But we are falling in between an old quota system that has quantitative and qualitative limitations. And that is going to shoot us in the foot. It's going to shoot us in the foot in the fashion corridor, in the hospitality corridor, in areas and in industries that are dependent not just on immigrant labor making beds and waiting on tables, but technology, the underbelly of just about every endeavor. So if we don't get this right, we're going to find ourselves training the world's talent here who pay tuition and then competing against them in another generation.
Right. Well, they're somewhere else. Now there is one change. One question I did want to bring into you, and this is that we've had a really dramatic change in what we've called, what I call, the new temporary immigrant. Back in the old days, when the family came to the country by a slow and very expensive boat, immigration was the one-way trip. The whole family came, planning to settle, never return to the old side. Now, in these days of Swiss travel, immigrant individuals have the opportunity, and the immigrants, to sort of maintain two homelands. There's so many that are split families, constant journeys back and forth, and a lot of flow of cash. It's not a bad thing, but I'm just asking, how do we need to adjust to this shifting immigration scenario?
We don't have a national language in the United States on purpose, because we recognize that there is this beautiful experience that you don't have to do what you're told when you come to America. You can pray on a Friday, a Saturday, or a Sunday. You can pray to Jerusalem. You can pray to a cow. You can pray whatever it is that you want to pray to, but you do not have to do what you're told. And that experience has translated itself in such a beautiful tapestry where the United States has opened itself up to all of these practices and kind of absorbs itself in a system that should be generic, so that we don't set protocols of distinction up. We don't want to know what person's color, race, or other deficiencies or entitlements or achievements are, because it's really nobody's business.
Right. I think you're right, and I think it's one of the things I've seen in business, the very hopeful thing, is that we literally can't afford bias, so it's drifting away. Gender, skin color, nationality, origin, if you can do the job and you're really, really good at it, boy, do we desperately want to, and we will haul you over there. So that is one of the things, and it comes from that very, very magic that you have just said. You're coming to a land where you don't have to do what you're told. I have so much more I want to ask you, but I just want to leave with one one last question. Michael, if I am actually two more questions. First of all, how can people get a copy of Safe Haven in America?
It's Safe Haven in America, Battles to Open the Golden Door. It's published by myself, Michael Wildes, and the American Bar Association. Alan Dershowitz had written the foreword. You can go on Amazon or in the ABA, who's the publisher. But Amazon has it, and it's available in Barnes & Noble and so forth as well.
Okay. All right. And how, if I am looking for immigration help or advice, even if I'm not a Miss Universe winner, how can I get a hold of some help from your? Well, I mean, do you only take beautiful?
No, we take everything. If it has a pulse and an accent, it's generally a good lead for our office. we've saved marriages by having the right. We've literally saved marriages, Bart, by having the right visa and green card selected for a housekeeper. And you would never know if my father was talking to John Lennon, his most preeminent client, or a housekeeper on the phone who we're dealing with, because of the station in life never meant anything to us. We're all project-based fee. We're located in New York, New Jersey, Miami, and by appointment only in L.A. I'm looking to open up other offices. We can be found on the Internet at wildslaw.com. That's WILDESLAW.com. We're on Facebook and Instagram and so forth. But we're more than honored to meet people. We have an onboarding of a consultation fee that we generally credit to the case. And it's really our privilege to do this yet another decade into what Dad started in 1958.
Wonderful. That's great. One final question before they're kicking us out of the door here. And it's, Michael, if I'm a young, eager, bright attorney and I'm seeking out a specialty, why might I choose immigration law, and what advice could you give my ardent ears?
There are people now going into law school. I teach in law school for the last 8 years, the Cardozo Law School in Manhattan. They're going in to learn immigration law. There are people that come to the United States, and they're impacted by it, and they want to help, and they want to roll up their sleeves. It's an extraordinary experience to see the increase in inventory that's there. So there are people going into the field specifically to do this, people who are interested in transactional experience, in helping people with their journeys and not pushing paper, and you can make a pretty buck if you're a good personality and if you're diligent. There's a heavy statute in a lot of cases, and it creates good detective work. When I sit here all day and I meet some of the finest families and individuals, whatever station in life they are, it's really a privilege, and it reminds me as I go home every night how important a contribution I as a lawyer and as an immigration lawyer I'm making to this nation, and how these individuals will be impacted by this journey as well and make this country all the more stronger.
Michael, I thank you so much, and I thank you for helping keep the lamp aloft and lit beside the golden door. May it long be hinged open. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me, Bart, and to all your listeners.
So, as we round out today's feast, I am Bart Jackson, your curator of business wisdom, leaving you with today's business quotation. Who was it who said, "Adversity makes men, prosperity makes monsters"? I love that. Well, as a hint, the famed author who penned this idea also penned the book from which Broadway's longest-running play, Les Miserables, was taken, said, remember, if you know that the author of this quote, simply scribble that sage's name down as you believe him or her to be. Send it right off to info@bartsbooks.com to win a career-igniting gift from the dungeons of Bart's Books bookstore. And be sure to tune in next week into the Art of the CEO radio show. We are going to chat with the foremost CEO advisor, Mr. George Watts, who will tell you how to unleash that joyful, exhilarating peak performance and stay happily on the summit of your business life. You need these ideas, my friend. And as a parting shot, in the words of my wife's husband, the most effective way for the business person to deal with politicians is to treat them as honorable ladies and gentlemen. They'll be so shocked, they may just listen to your reasoning. Oh, in fact, wouldn't that be a good way if you treated everyone? Just a thought. At any rate, to you, gleefully sharing our feast, I hope you've enjoyed the Art of the CEO show as much as Michael and I have enjoyed bringing it to you. And remember that you may download this and all our shows by simply visiting theartoftheceo.com. And finally, to you, who have honored us with your time, May I say, as always, it has been a privilege, and I thank you. Goodbye.